Hey, welcome back to Rethinking Supply Chain. I'm John Abrams, and my guest today is Rob Dunkel, who runs 3PM Solutions, which is, I'll let Rob describe it. It gets into AI and product content and all of the things that when we talk about supply chain and the digital side of supply chain, Rob gets into those aspects of it. Listeners and viewers won't know this, but we spent probably 10 minutes just climbing up on our soapboxes about supply chain just before we started this. So I'm very excited to talk to you today, Rob. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And so one of the things, and I'll frame this for our listeners, I view you as an outsider to supply chain. For me, I've been in the gears of supply chain for a long time. And so to some extent, my frustration about supply chain is based on things that are very much in the inner workings of traditional supply chain. And so I look at things where they are manual and I say, oh, yuck, manual process, that's a bad thing. But I don't come at it from the outside where you do, and I don't know how long you've been exposed to supply chain, but one of our first conversations months and months ago, you were just so frustrated at, oh my God, I can't believe supply chain actually works this way. And so I'm going to use that frame of you as an outsider to really get into the grind of supply chain and why you are sort of energized by the inefficiency of supply chain. And I'm just curious, like, what drew you in? And from your outsider's perspective, are you frustrated as a now participant on the digital side of supply chain? Are you frustrated by the inefficiencies you see? And why are you still in it?
Oh, those are good questions. Where should I start? Well, first I got into it because I had actually bought a counterfeit product off of Amazon.
Oh.
And I started investigating and doing research. And from my perspective, I was running an algorithmic trading company or trading group. I looked at it as a technology and data problem. And that's kind of where it all started. How can we collect this data and how can we analyze it fast? And so when you think about physical retail, the data is structured. But when you get to e-commerce, it's unstructured. And it's not only that it's different between retailer to retailer, but actually category to category. And so you had to build technologies that could analyze content fast. So understand the image, or understand what the intent of the listing is.
So let's talk about image for a second, because right before we started recording, you were sort of on a tear about image. And I would suggest that image, the thing that we see on our iPhone or our laptop when we're buying something, it has existed as a categorized element of the digital purchase path really only for a few years. And when I say a few years, I'm not talking 10, I'm talking 3-ish. And let me just give a little bit more setup for this question about image, but let me just give you some high-level history of attributes in supply chain. The first wave of supply chain, of digital supply chain, was created after World War II, really to accommodate the Berlin airlift. So late 46, 47, 48, as people were deciding, hey, we got to feed Berlin. How do we get supplies there? And how do we do it in a way that people know a plane load of flour is arriving? And so there was a categorization of supply chain attributes and a standardization. So that created EDI, so 850 whatever. All of that really is part of the EDI data set. So we have companies today, very successful, who are EDI companies who really are architected based on the fundamental attributes of 1946, 7, 8. That's crazy to me, but it's the truth. By the way, back in 1948, your ability to transmit a digital image, zero ability to do that. next wave of supply chain tech was architected around the barcode. How do you check out a product at the counter? And so there was a standards body formed. It's become GS1 today, and it's architected around a data pool called the GDSN, the Global Data Synchronization Network. And in that data pool, there was not, up until fairly recently, image. So just think about this for a second, Rob, because it, I think it's going to spawn your unloading on this topic. Up until a few years ago, image wasn't even classified in the GS1 pool of attributes. So when you get frustrated about, hey, the image isn't there, the fundamental architecture on which most of digital commerce, in fact, commerce overall, was architected is either EDI, supply chain tech, 1940s, or GDSN tech of 1970s. But there's relatively little that's in this, what I would call the third wave of supply chain, which is, hey, look, I don't care whether it's image, I don't care whether it's a description, I don't care what it is, it's an attribute that describes a product and I want it, and I want no structure around that. So image, I think, is best accommodated in this third wave, but all of supply chain tech is based on either 1940s or 1970s technology. So your frustration...
I don't know if it's a frustration, I think it's a stupidity. I mean, I don't understand how... And we collect a lot of data, so...
So how much? Like, what do you analyze? What's the...
So we collect well over a billion requests each week. We'll probably target closer to a billion per day. We have customers who we analyze a few million listings per hour. And we're not talking about analyzing, say, a price change. We're talking about understanding the actual listing itself. So understanding whether... It's an Apple phone case in the image. So things like that, understanding, you know, whether the title, you know, has the brand in it and some of the other features. So unlike if you look at some of these companies who might analyze a listing content, you know, by the number of images or the character count, we're actually going deeper into it and trying to understand what the customer experience is with that. So by doing that, you kind of start looking at how could you have the same image on Walmart, Target, Amazon? That's just not going to, Amazon's not going to allow that to happen. You have images, it might be the front pack, but then you have like a benefits or a lifestyle image. This stuff doesn't happen with GDSN. So, and you know, it changes seasonality. So how am I going to be changing this? And by the way, this retailer wants this image and this audience for this other retailer should be this. Or there will be a time when a company like, you know, I could see Amazon doing this or Walmart or whoever, where they'll change the image based on that person because marketing people understand that different images, you know, relate with different people.
Yeah. And I think most of the research companies, so the big research, you know, tech research that's out there, when you talk to the analysts, sometimes you're able to have a conversation outside of their paying clientele, which can include GDSN companies. So there's a lot of GDSN data pool companies out there. And that's global. I probably will get this wrong. I sat on the GS1 board for healthcare for several years. Mm-hmm. So I understand the inner workings of how that sort of academic, very grounded, very rigorous structure is applied to produce governance for image. It's not very fluid and it's not very quick. So your comment around golly, we should have images that are attuned to the individual. The structure isn't capable of doing that. And again, it is worth noting that the GDSN is architected around conveying uniqueness around the barcode. So how do I assign a barcode uniquely to a product or a size of a product? So that architecture, 1972, is what the GDSN is architected around. And so you're looking at, well, golly, we should have all these different images and have a variable nature. The data pool structure is just not capable of doing that. But you sort of can't fault organizations for living in a framework that doesn't allow them to do the kind of things you're talking about. Maybe this is an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that, to this question. But how do you break out of this mold where, let's pick on Sears. I'm always quick to do that. So Sears was an innovator back in the day, putting things on a rail car and shipping them across the country. That was a big deal. Ordering out of a catalog, that was a big deal. If you were in the West and you wanted to buy a new saddle, getting it out of the catalog, that's a big deal. That's very innovative for the 1800s. That same model doesn't apply today. And so, but you look at any major retailer, they really have been formed out of those frameworks. So how do you break out of that? I get your frustration, but how do you break out of that?
If I look at a company like Amazon, because Amazon is pretty much has dominated e-commerce, and I look at Walmart, I think used to use GDSN.
They did.
And they stopped. We could tell that they've changed their ways because we compare listings from Amazon to Walmart, and you can see there's a big difference. And so therefore, now you're seeing, since Walmart's putting so much investment in the e-commerce, and it's truly growing, where, say, before, and I've heard from different people have said, hey, our e-commerce business at Walmart, and I'm just throwing out numbers, I think it was like maybe 3 or 4%, but expect it to be over 20. So it's truly growing. They're investing in it. But I think Walmart actually probably saw a problem that how can we use this GDSN data and actually sell to our customers? Because I can tell you, when you compare the listings of a GDSN listing versus one that's actually done by a marketing team or creative team, and there's a huge difference. You know, they're analyzing the product reviews. And so they're understanding their customers, you know, they're getting customer feedback or consumer questions. And if there's a lot of questions on a product, well, they want to add it to the attribute. Well, I just can't go and add that to my GDSN.
So that's an interesting thing. I don't know the answer to this, I'm sure. And if I get it wrong, but it's probably directionally correct. The number of attributes available in the world of EDI, let's call that in the hundreds range. So things that you can stuff into an 850 whatever transaction. So, you know, orders coming, things like that. Limited set of attributes, probably in the hundreds. If you go into the GDSN, I think Major Release 3, which was their most recent upgrade to the attribute set for the GDSN, I think we're in the thousands. EDI in the 40s, hundreds. GDSN in the 70s, thousands. I think the next wave, and maybe this is what you and I are sort of kicking around here, is the next wave is unlimited. It's infinite. So what are the number of images you should associate or you can associate with the product? The actual answer, I think, is, I don't know, unlimited. That is not something that the architectures of the 40s or 70s provided. And I think it's what the market's demanding. So I want to dig in a little bit to your listing commentary, and I don't know if we'll fit it in this episode, but the differences you're calling out between either Amazon, Walmart, and or the differences between well-curated content that is going to provoke a buy, a purchase, is that something that, so when you see it, when you're looking at the analysis of this stuff, how attuned to this problem are companies? And so you mentioned Walmart and they're making investment. Like, are they going the right way? What do you see the future looking like?
I look at it a few different ways. I can look at, say, a Walmart that's making some of these changes or look at, so we compare, as I said, like in order to actually understand the listing quality, you can't just look at, you have to look at it and you have to understand how is it being represented at different other retailers. So therefore we're collecting a lot of data. We're comparing different listings across different retailers. And so we can see some of the ones who are using the GDSN data because they're all exactly the same.
Hmm.
And I can tell you, Walgreens isn't really a place where I think e-commerce has been a huge initiative. A company like Kroger, same thing. Like, I look at grocery and how much grocery is taken off during COVID. And yeah, great. Kroger maybe doubled their sales for e-commerce, but doubling sales of something that was nothing is still nothing. And just the consumer experience, it's terrible. And we also know it because companies like Instacart, we're looking at them and, you know, they're using, in certain cases, using the GDSN data, which is being given to them through that actual grocer. A lot of big opportunities missed for those companies.
It's interesting. I want to point out something that sort of blew me away today, and it's in the e-commerce vein, but it's the simplicity of something. So I took the train down today. I went to order coffee from Starbucks. I had to click 7 times to get my order completed. Now, I'm not a digital native. I, you know, anybody that's viewing this can tell I'm long in the tooth. I've been in supply chain a long time. I'm not a digital native. But that said, we all use e-commerce today. We all expect that one-click experience. I picked my product from Starbucks, and it still took me a whole bunch of effort to get all the way through the purchase and the checkout. And so this idea that e-commerce needs to be simple, it needs to be intuitive, it needs to be creating that compelling motivation for purchase. We're not there yet.
I agree with you because our company, it's all about automation. Mm. So I'm 7 clicks, stuff like that frustrates me. However, the other part that some people aren't thinking about is, oh, well, e-commerce is only a certain percentage of our sales. Well, all sales most likely start on e-commerce. Mm. People are researching products on e-commerce. I mean, that's one of the things about Amazon, the selection. And so that's where it starts. So if people, so to say, oh, you know, we don't have that much e-commerce. Well, you know, people like to buy in the store. Well, the reality is people start online. They may go and buy it in the store, but they've started online. And if you have a good experience, most likely you'll convert them there. If you have a bad experience, well, then maybe they do come in the store. Or maybe they go in your competitor's store. But you got to think of that. Commerce starts online.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a perfect way. We're gonna wrap it up there, and I'm going to kick into our next session a little bit more detail on the significance and the difference that you're seeing in where people are investing in e-commerce for good result and where they're not. And so we'll tease out some of these old guard approaches, maybe Walgreens versus Walmart, and see where that goes. Hey, thanks so much for being here, and look forward to our next show.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Rethinking Supply Chain, sponsored by Venzee. To stay up to date with our latest podcast releases, follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter, and subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can also learn more about the podcast at rethinkingsupplychain.com. Thanks for listening.